No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Together with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the conversation by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBSRADIOPR. Maria's off tonight. She's starting a new semester, and she's got a lot of things on her plate. So we've given her the night off, but we have a special guest, somebody that has been on the show many times before and really is a stalwart on DC statehood. And since it's the beginning of the year, that's really what we want to talk about, where we stand on D.C. statehood, where we're going, and what people are doing. So please, let's welcome Anise Jenkins to our show. Anise is the executive director of Stand Up for Democracy, which is one of the oldest groups in the district today working on this. More than 20 years now, right? Anise,
yes.
20 or 20?
Yeah, more than 20. Yeah, we celebrated last November was our 20th anniversary, and we're still going, still doing it.
Well, and doing it right, too. I mean, Anise, I know you people have heard me say this before, but she really is the soul of our movement, even when we have diverted from time to time and gone after voting rights. Anise has always stood firm for statehood, which is the one thing that makes the people of the District of Columbia whole. Today, we still go after incremental steps. But the truth of the matter is we have a case in court right now, and we have Eleanor Holmes Norton, our delegate, putting in legislation that will do piecemeal restore some of the rights of D.C. residents. But it's statehood. Statehood is what we really need, and statehood is what really makes us whole.
So
we're on a roll, right? Eleanor Holmes Norton has put in a new bill, right? Let's talk about that for a minute.
Yes, she has.
174 co-sponsors, the most ever, 155 original introducers on H.R. 51. And to give a shout out to Maria, we're going to start thanking these people on the air. We're not going to do it tonight because to read 174 names would put everybody to sleep. But next week, we'll start doing them a little at a time. But I would like to point out, since Maria's not here, that 35 co-sponsors, the most, 20% of all the co-sponsors come from California. We love the people
Thank
of California.
You. Yeah. Thank you, California.
Thank you, California. And just to show you what a big deal that is, the next highest state is New York with 15. So California has 2.5 times as many as New York, which is in second place. But anyway, why don't you tell us some of the things that you're doing? I know that you had a hip-hop contest, which I just thought was so cool, such a cool idea to get young people involved.
It was a lot of fun. I think the performers enjoyed it, the people who participated and came. You came. Thank you so much for coming and talking about statehood. And our goal was to get younger people involved. And we did. I think maybe the average age of, not to put it down because I'm one of those in the average age range, maybe it's, would you say 50 or over 50 for people involved in statehood?
Yes.
Seriously involved, yeah.
Yeah.
So we did have younger people who participated. We were told that Facebook is the old people's way to communicate. And we got a young lady who got us involved with the Instagram and advertised what we were doing. We were looking for young people. We started with age 15 to 25, but we had to broaden it because some of the more interested people were over the 25 age range. But it was a great great afternoon. And we did it at the African American Civil War Museum. And it was just a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. I do have to thank Frank Barr. He recorded it, and we have it on our YouTube channel, which is Free DC.
Well, and we'll try to get that up on it. Maybe we can get that up on the BBS Radio, on BBS Radio, too, put it on our homepage so people can look at it, because yeah, it's great, and it was great. And let me just say one thing about the African American Civil War Museum. This is a tiny little museum that was started by former Councilman Frank Smith, who's just a wonderful man, but it's very interesting. You know, African Americans played a major role in the Civil War. And they had almost been forgotten in history, I think, in a lot of ways when Frank started this. But if you get to Washington, D.C., folks, if you're not from Washington, or if you are from Washington, make sure you go see the African American Civil War Museum, which is right off U Street in the district, because it's really a fascinating place and it's a fascinating story. So many African Americans stepped up to the plate to try to gain their own freedom by being on the side of the North. You know, and we're still fighting that fight, isn't it? As strange as it is, we're still fighting that fight. Anise will tell you, Anise is one of the main actors on Emancipation Day, which is our only holiday in the District of Columbia. It celebrates when Abraham Lincoln bought approximately 4,700, I think it was 4,700 slaves in the district and set them free in advance of the Emancipation Proclamation. And we still celebrate that because we're still really not fully emancipated.
That's
here,
right.
Are we?
That's right. We call it first freed, but last free. We were the first enslaved people to be released, but we still don't have the full citizenship that we fought for. When the enslaved people were released, the first thing they did was march down Pennsylvania Avenue with signs that read, "I want to vote."
Yeah.
They knew exactly what they were missing to be real, complete citizens. And we're still fighting that. Fighting that battle.
That's absolutely right. And you know that at first we had when they had the first Emancipation Days in the District of Columbia, it used to be a big deal. The President of the United States used to show up. For the parades and stuff. But then it died. People, and this is one of the reasons I think it's so important in what Anise is trying to do with young people, because the holiday really died for many, many years until this really amazing woman. Well, why don't you tell the story? How did we get back to Emancipation Day?
Yes, I was lucky enough to meet Loretta Carter Haynes. We went to, the way it happened is I and Karen Shulgit went to the office of our delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton, and she had a calendar on the wall, and it said April 16th. It had a date, April 16th, on the calendar, and it said D.C. Emancipation Day. Well, neither one of us knew what that was, but emancipation sounded like what we were looking for as far as supporting D.C. statehood. Talking about freedom and equality, that's what we were looking for. So what we did was go to the library and research what was Emancipation Day, pulled up some information out of D.C. City paper, and there was a picture of this woman dancing with what was said was a 100-year-old man, and she was dressed in an African garb, and she was Loretta Carter Haynes. Well, Loretta Carter Haynes almost single-handedly revived what at that time was not being observed officially by the D.C. government, D.C. Emancipation Day. She campaigned for it. I remember being out there while she was in her wheelchair getting petition signatures to have this day recognized and given the full celebration that it deserved. And not just a celebration, but observed, to have it observed as a very important historical part of D.C. history. She got it done. It was signed into law. A bill was signed into law by former Mayor Anthony Williams, and it is our only official public holiday. It has to be observed by the D.C. government. It has to be a where D.C. Government employees are off, and it's kind of diminished. Now, I'm not really satisfied with what the D.C. government is doing with it right now, because it was a huge parade. Once it became revived, it was a few of us that walked, but now the parade route has been cut down to about 3 blocks, which is absolutely absurd. We really need to honor this day. April 16th needs to be honored fully and completely by the D.C. government.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And, you know, the mayor throws a breakfast every year, and someone that we both knew and honored, you know, we're honored to know Dick Gregory at the one of the last breakfasts I was at, stood up and looked around the room. This was not last year, but the year before. And there were about, 100, 150 people there. And he said, what are we celebrating? What are we celebrating? Why when 150 people are together, are we having a celebration? Why don't we celebrate when we get 50,000 people together on Emancipation Day? Because that's a day to celebrate. Right now, we should be doing the work that it takes to get those people and worry about patting ourselves on the back a little later, right? And you're right. We've cut the parade route down. It's not promoted the way it should be. And we, you know, it really is our holiday. It's much like other holidays like this, which are, you know, July the 4th. Juneteenth, lots of other monumental days that get more attention. And that's a problem with the whole statehood movement as far as the government goes. I don't think they put enough into this. But, you know, I've been thinking, and the civil rights movements in the South were always led by people. They weren't led by governments. Governments don't have as much of a vested interest. Right. And how ironic is it in the District of Columbia that you not only have things like Emancipation Day, but you have Brown versus Board of Education. You have Martin Luther King's famous speech on the Mall, the March on Washington. You've had all these pivotal moments in the history of the civil rights movement that happened here in the District of Columbia. And still the District of Columbia is the one place where people in the continental United States do not have the same rights as everybody else. It's just crazy. It's crazy.
And I think it really shows you all the things that you named, the 4th of July, the fight for civil rights in the South, took people power. It was successful because people really committed to having their freedom and having their equality. And people in D.C. voted for a referendum in 2016, but I think it's very important that people stay involved, that people get out there, that they contact their relatives around the country, that this becomes a priority in the life of D.C. residents. It takes a lot of big effort. The fact that we are at 174 co-sponsors is a result of a few people getting together. We need everybody to get together and fight for these rights.
That's absolutely right. And we not only need that nationally and internationally, to be honest, but we also need it locally. There's a guy who was chief of staff for one of our first delegates to Congress many, many years ago. Back in the 1800s, we had a guy named Norm Chipman. But then it went very, very long time before we got to elect another delegate to Congress, and that was Walter Fauntleroy. And one of Reverend Fauntleroy's, his chief of staff, Johnny Barnes, tells this story about how they tried to get legislation passed to make Martin Luther King's birthday a national holiday, and they could get no traction. They couldn't get anybody to, just a handful of people to co-sponsor the bill. And then Stevie Wonder wrote a song that I think we're all familiar with, Happy Birthday Martin, I think is the title of the song, but we all know the song. And yeah. And he performed it on the West Lawn of the Capitol, and 50,000 people showed up.
Yeah.
And the next day, they had people clamoring to be on the bill, to support the bill. And as we all know, with the exception of Arizona, and I don't know what's wrong with those guys out in Arizona, but it's a national holiday. You know, the people of Arizona, I don't want to pick on you, but you are a little contrary. You don't have daylight savings time, and you refuse to celebrate MLK Day. I don't know what's up. But, you know, Johnny Barnes often says, you give me 50,000 people on the West Lawn of the Capitol, and I'll give you statehood. And I think that's true. If we can get people out there to stand up, you know, that'll happen.
And, I just want to add, I'll never forget that I was there when Stevie Wonder came to perform that song. And it was an amazing day. It was cold. It was snowy, just like it is today in D.C. But all of a sudden, Stevie Wonder came out and the sun came out. It was just an amazing day. And that song really, that was really what we were seeking to do with our hip-hop rap contest, is like, discover a song that's going to motivate people. And that is asking for a lot. I mean, it doesn't happen every day, which we found out. You know, it takes a lot of effort, a lot of talent to get that to happen. But you need inspiration. Music is one of the keys, I think. Art and music are keys to inspiring people.
Absolutely. And I think they play a role. We can see that in every movement. You know, we just did a back on the subject of young people. I just came from Chicago a few weeks ago, where I did a presentation on statehood at the National Conference of Social Studies, which brought 4,800 social studies teachers and professionals from around the country to Chicago for this a 3-day event. And we did a session on D.C. statehood, and we started it out with a segment of freedom songs from the from the civil rights movement. And they're all songs we know, right? We Shall Overcome, and Wade in the Water, and Freedom, Oh Freedom. You know, we know all these songs that are part of our culture. And that's one thing about art and music, is it endures. You know, it always bothers me. I don't want to digress here, but it bothers me when art and music are the first thing that they cut when the budget is tight in public schools. You know, because we don't talk about the great economies of Rome or Greece, or, you know, we talk about their art, we talk about their music, we talk about their culture. Those are the things that endure. And I think you're absolutely right, Nisa, and you're on the right track to try to get to infuse some more of that in our movement. But on the upside, we see a lot of movement going on. I mean, we not only have California, who is, you know, at least considering into breaking into multiple states. We have Puerto Rico, who had a statehood bill in the last session, 115th Congress, and we assume we'll put it in again in the 116th Congress. We have what I think is singly the most amazing thing to happen in recent days. We had the Congress put in a bill called H.R. 1, which has three paragraphs in it on D.C. statehood. H.R. 1 is there to expand voter participation and as among other things, and they went on and on about how important D.C. statehood is. What do you think of that? It has
223 co-sponsors.
Yeah,
there's no way we can go around the world claiming that we are the center of the world's democracy. And people don't even, we're the only capital in the world where the residents cannot participate in the basic rights and decisions that are made by the country. We're the only capital in the entire world.
Well, and how crazy is it? I mean, first of all, H.R. 1 has 223 co-sponsors, which is great. But how crazy is that? I mean, so many of us, before I got involved in this issue, I worked for 30 years in national politics in D.C. We're the center of democracy in our democracy. And you know, it's just crazy to me. It's like telling the people of Detroit they can't drive cars, or telling the people of California, you know, Hollywood, you can make the movies, you just can't go see them. You know, yeah. Because we're all so involved. And, you know, the opposition that we have wants to paint us as, you know, all working for the IRS or something. But, you know, the truth of the matter is that more Washingtonians work in the public interest than I think any other occupation. In the city. And I don't care where you are. If you're a liberal and you believe in, you know, you stand behind the National Organization of Women, or, you know, conservation groups, the Conservation League, or any of these big liberal groups in D.C., you've got D.C. residents working for those groups. But if you're on the other side, if you know, the Cato Institute or the National Rifle Association or whatever your position is, I guarantee you there are Washingtonians every day working for what they believe is to make America a better place to live. And these are the last people that should be cut out of the process, in my humble opinion. But beyond H.R. 1 and 223 co-sponsors, then we have the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, a woman that I really, really admire. We worked together at the DNC, Anise. Nancy Pelosi was a vice chair at the DNC when I worked at the DNC. And she came out and just gave an amazing statement in support of D.C. statehood, in support of H.R. 51 when it was put in. Her father, who was the mayor of Baltimore and a member of Congress, was on the D.C. committee of Congress when Congress had a D.C. committee. And I've heard her speak eloquently about how he told her, even as a little girl, that he thought the people of the District of Columbia should have the same rights everybody else has. So she was she gave an eloquent defense of statehood for the District of Columbia, and so did Elizabeth Warren. I don't know. Did you see that, Anise?
I didn't see that. I read Eleanor Holmes Norton's quoting Pelosi, but no, I did not know Elizabeth Warren did that. But I do see that the new star, what is her name, AOC, has statehood. Yes.
Yes.
It's real. I mean, this is really important support that we're getting, and very important.
And she's an important voice because I can't remember her middle name, but her last name is Cortez. She's an important supporter because she's young. She's young and newly elected and understands the importance of this. Yes. And Elizabeth Warren put this out on her campaign letterhead. You know, she started an exploratory campaign, and she put out a 2-page statement on support for DC statehood just out of the blue. Now, she's been a supporter of ours in the past, but, you know, nobody, to my knowledge, asked her to do this, or there was no official request, but she stood up and so we expect when Senator Carper reintroduces our bill in the Senate that we'll have more than the 30 co-sponsors we had last time. We've lost 2 co-sponsors in the Senate due to attrition, people that didn't get reelected. But another good news, another piece of good news, is that there are several senators who look like who have either declared that they're going to run for president or look like they're seriously considering it. Gillibrand in New York has announced. Warren has announced. Brown, Klobuchar, Sanders, Booker, Kamala Harris. All these people are potential people. And guess what? Every last one of them is a DC statehood supporter. So, co-sponsor of the bill. That's exactly right. And in the 115th Congress. So we can assume that, like the past 2 Democratic candidates, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, that whoever the next Democratic candidate is likely to be a statehood supporter, a strong supporter of statehood, and that's great for the district. It's like all the stars are starting to align again.
It's just, and it's just not happening. It's a result of work. I mean, this is years. As you said, we celebrated our 20th a year ago, so we're in 21 years. This is years of work and effort, and the people finding out about this dirty little secret. I call it a dirty little secret. Most people around the country don't know. But the exposure that it's getting, as far as people contacting their relatives around the country, writing newspaper articles, I mean, all of those things are very important to shine a light on this injustice. It's just unacceptable to have people just shut out and locked out of democracy. We can't have this country of so-called equality, and not and exclude 700,000 people because of where they live. It's not acceptable.
That's exactly right. And you know, I think your use of the term "shine a light on it" is so appropriate. I think of One of the things that is a lovely memory for me is that when I went to one of the first hearings on Capitol Hill, I got to meet a civil rights icon and a hero of mine, Dorothy Height, who actually thanked me for my hard work. I came home and I said to my wife, I said, I can't believe that that Dorothy Height thanked me for my activism. But anyway, I went to her memorial service, and you were probably there, Anise. And if you remember, at the end of the service, they started singing "This Little Light of Mine," and it was very, very moving. Everybody in the church, the President of the United States was there. just a bunch of luminaries who had great respect for this woman. Yeah. And everybody sang "This Little Light of Mine." And that's really what she, in my opinion, was about. She was about, you know, she was always a lady. She was always very distinguished. And she was about shining a light on the problem, bringing it to people's attention. And we know this is a major problem with our movement, because 80% of America in a poll said they thought we had the same rights as everybody else. Why wouldn't they?
That's right. And Dr. Height, actually, I'm really proud to say that our organization, Stand Up for Democracy in D.C., known as Free D.C., met in her building once a week for 10 years. With her blessing, she was our honorary chair, and she supported us 100%, just 100%. She was she saw it as a civil rights issue, and that's where her heart was.
Yes, she really supported us. Yes, absolutely. Did. And, you know, she did it. She had a particular, I don't know what you want to call it, style or demeanor, where she was always very distinguished but also very resolute. I remember at a memorial service that Barack Obama said that he thought that she walked into his office more than anybody else. You know, when she had something to say to him, she went and said it to him. And, you know, we need more people like that in the movement. Anise Jenkins is also one of those people. I could never be compared to her. I've never heard you back down. I've never heard you say anything but the statehood is something that we need, and you do it with great distinction, Anise. You're not you're not out threatening anybody or being a rabble rouser, really, but you're resolute in what you do, and you speak your mind, and you never back down. And if we could find five more Anise Jenkins, we would be a state, I guarantee you.
Oh, so, Senator Brown, I have to thank you for that, because I feel the same way about you. You are a stalwart. You are out there fighting, unpaid, I might add, unpaid, doing it for free, doing it out of the belief in the movement. I mean, we need more people like you also. But Dr. Height, she was very close to Miss Killingham, Marilyn Killingham, the lady who really pushed us to say no. We're not going for anything else. They were very close friends.
I know. I was on the wrong side of a few arguments with Mrs. Killingham, and she was also an eloquent spokesperson and resolute. And you know, I was actually just telling the story the other day about another woman that we have here and a strong statehood supporter, although we don't see her much anymore, and that's Faith. Who ran for mayor time and time again, and used to get on me to make sure that she stayed on top of me to make sure that I was doing, working hard on statehood. And I'll never forget, I think she was 78 or 79, and she came to the Palisades 4th of July thing on a horse. She was on a horse by herself, and I'm pretty sure she was bareback. I can't remember, but she was on this horse.
She was in a bodysuit. That's what she was in. Yes, Faith. Yes, indeed.
Bodysuit. And I remember that I had a statehood T-shirt on, and I walked up to her on the horse, and I said to her, "Faith," I said, "I have statehood in my heart." And she looked at me and she said, "Good, now get your head out of your rear end and do something." So, you know, these are great people that have been dedicated to the cause. Mrs. Killingham was an amazing person. Loretta Carter Haynes. Unfortunately,
Murray. I don't know if you're familiar with Miss Murray, but
I don't know Miss Murray except by reputation, and I I've heard you talk about her, and I've heard other people talk about her, and I know that she was quite an amazing woman too.
Absolutely.
But that doesn't surprise me, as I've had a lot of amazing women in my life. You know, I've gotten along in life due very often to the hard work of amazing women. So, but as we move our movement forward, we do need to get more people involved. So if you're out there listening, call in, let us know what you feel, or you know, call your representatives, call your relatives, say this is so unfair, it's so un-American. And if you believe, as Dr. King believed, that a threat to justice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, you should support us, right?
That's right. And we will be marching on the 21st of January in the Martin Luther King Parade and carrying our banner for statehood. This is part of a tradition that we started. And Martin Luther King definitely marched in D.C. for what was called at that time home rule, which is one thing that we're suffering under now. But he would have been, I am 1,000% sure, he would have been pushing for statehood. There's no doubt about that. Full freedom, full rights.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's a fun event. You should come if you're in Washington or if you live here. You should participate. It's a great event in Anacostia, in that part of the city. And the only complaint I have is that in the past, it's been really cold on a couple of them. Mm. But last year was beautiful, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so hopefully it'll warm up a little bit by then. It's a week from tomorrow. So
yes, it is the 21st.
Yeah, so if you're in Washington and you can get over there, you should come. It's fun, and it's meaningful for us to get together as a community and participate this way and get our message out. And let me ask you, as a longtime Washingtonian, Anise, why do you think it is that, now this may not be true, but this is the way it appears to me, that people in Anacostia, for example, are more engaged on this issue than people in Northwest, or not Northwest so much as, let's say, my neighborhood, AU Park or Tenleytown or mm-hmm. Georgetown? Why do you think the people in Anacostia care more about this?
It's the same reason that the Congressional Black Caucus is almost 100% co-sponsors of the D.C. statehood bill. I am an African-American woman. I know what it is to be excluded from society. I know what it means to be discriminated against. And what's happening to D.C. residents is a form of exclusion and a form of discrimination from the rights that this country guarantees. It's really simple. Anacostia, the people in Anacostia are African-American by and large, and we know what it is to be excluded.
Well,
I think it's very simple.
Well, you make that's an important point, and I will tell you, since we're talking about equal rights, the Equal Rights Amendment still has not been ratified. But when it was originally put out, there was only one group of people that ratified it 100% when it went through the legislatures, and that was African American elected officials. Every African American elected official, when the Equal Rights Amendment was first put out to the states, every one of them that was elected agreed to ratify. So again, I'm sure that's the reason, because they understand, not only understand what it's like to be discriminated against, but understand how important it is to have these rights. Sometimes it bothers me in Washington that people don't understand how important this is. They act like it's no big deal. Or they act like, you know, they. I know you hear this too, Anise. Oh, the federal government gives you money, so that makes it all right. Well, the federal government doesn't give us money anymore. That, you know, that was a long time ago. You know, or you have 435 members of Congress looking after you. Nothing could be further from the truth. You know, these people, I say that everything I ever learned about politics in life that's useful, I learned from a Broadway musical. And Porgy and Bess is one of my favorites. And God bless a child that's got his own. The people of California, 35 of them care enough to support our bill, but I guarantee you they care about the people of California first, because that's their job. And, you know, and we have plenty of guys. You're very familiar with one of our chief protagonists of the past, Bob Barr. We have another guy named Andy Harris in Maryland. Yeah. And these people are always picking on the district. And, you know, and I'm not sure that everybody out there realizes that any member of Congress can mess with the District of Columbia. You can be a congressman or a representative or a senator, and you can get in the middle of our lives. It's just crazy. It's crazy. Imagine sending Muriel Bowser out to the middle of Utah or Arizona or something to get involved in some local decisions that are being made out there. It's just it's ridiculous. Ridiculous. Besides the parade, which is coming up, and I know that you're intimately involved in it, what else do you have on the agenda? Anything else that coming up that
there's a lobby day, a big lobby day that's being planned close to Frederick Douglass's birthday. I don't have the exact date, but people will be going up on the hill, D.C. residents, allies that we have formed will go up on the hill and educate Congress members, particularly new Congress members. I think we have several of the new Congress people, but about D.C. statehood, get them to sign on to the bill, ask them to be co-sponsors, at least expose them to the situation that exists right now in D.C. So that's coming up very soon, and hopefully we'll get lots of co-sponsors after that lobby day, or education on the Hill Day, I guess we could call it. So that's a big day coming up.
Yeah, and we will post that on our website. It's sometime in February. I'm not sure exactly what day they picked yet. But Anise Jenkins is sure that Dr. King would be in favor of statehood, I'm equally sure that Frederick Douglass would have been in favor of statehood as well.
Yeah.
So it's appropriate that we do it near his birthday.
For the last, I'd say 3 or 4 years, our organization has gone up on the hill on Valentine's Day, because ironically, that's the actual day that Frederick Douglass chose as his birthday, because as an enslaved person, people actually did not have the records to prove when they were born. So he selected Valentine's Day because his mother told him that's the day he was born. So it's really, we've gone up on the hill to educate people about Valentine's Day, thank the people who have co-sponsored with a Valentine, and gone and say, we've got, you know, something for you if you support the bill, if they haven't. So that's a very appropriate time, Frederick Douglass's birthday. Around that time is a really great time to educate on D.C. statehood and get more co-sponsors.
Yeah, and also Valentine's Day being a day where we kind of show appreciation for the people that we love in life, that makes it even that much more important. That you know, I remember we used to have a group called Young Suffragists, but unfortunately, the Young Suffragists got old. They all grew up. They were
have
little
you seen
kids.
Any of them?
Oh, yeah, because some of them went to school with my kids, and, you know, we used to take them down to the White House, and they would march, and they were very, very effective, because, you know, when a 9-year-old kid is saying to you, look, I don't have the same rights that you do, people stop and listen. But now they're all in college or out of college. All my young suffragists are, have grown up. And now they only call me when they need the rent money. But, they used to give Valentines to senators. And they'd say, won't you be my Valentine?
Oh, okay.
Won't you have a heart? Won't you have a heart and support D.C. statehood? And that's a very appropriate time. And we should point out a few other things that are going on that bode well for us. In 2020, there will be three times as many Republican senators up for re-election as there were in 2018. So the Democrats really have a chance to take over an opportunity to take over the Senate again. And, you know, this has become a partisan battle, as you know. We have 174 co-sponsors on our new bill, but every one of them is a Democrat, don't have one Republican. My staff, Karen Zolgin and Rachel and I have been lobbying Republicans, trying to get a Republican on our bill in the House. We've been talking to Republicans who are on the Puerto Rico bill, because in 2000, in the 115th Congress, there were 8 Republicans that supported the Puerto Rican bill. So we're trying to get them on our bill. But in 2020, we have an opportunity to take back the Senate. And if Democrats have the Senate and the House, I think that our bill for statehood will go through both houses, and then our only obstacle will be getting the person at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue to sign it. And I believe we'll be replacing him. I mean, I'm not even sure at this point that the Republicans won't replace him. I'm you know, the way things are going for the president, I'm not sure that I don't think it's 100% that he'll even be the nominee.
I just wonder how politically savvy he is. You take people's paychecks right after Christmas. You know, people are trying to pay off those bills. And they're trying to pay their mortgage, trying to pay their car note. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's
well, and you know what? They had some Trump supporters on TV today who voted for him, who are now not getting paid and are just, you know, they're beside themselves about it. And you're absolutely right. And just so you know, every time the federal government closed down, the District of Columbia had to close down until this time. This is the first time, I think, where we haven't had to do that because of legislation that our delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton, got through Congress in the 115th Congress. So the district is still open for business and providing services to people, but then we're picking up the tab for that. So it still affects us. And we went to the press conference to introduce H.R. 51, both Delegate Norton and Mayor Bowser said that we're going to go after the federal government to be reimbursed. I hope that happens. But we're still affected by the government shutdown, not to mention that Washington and the metropolitan area, the region, Washington, Maryland, and Virginia has among the highest amount of federal jobs in the country. There are a couple other places that are also have a lot of federal workers. But yeah, it hurts our economy. You drive down Constitution Avenue. I drove down Constitution Avenue to go to the Capitol last week, and there's nobody out there. The government buildings are shut down. All the museums are shut down. You know, I almost parked my car because it was the first time I'd ever driven by the Air and Space Museum where there was actually a parking spot in front. Yeah, it's had a dramatic effect on us, and it's having an effect all across the country. And yeah, I don't understand it. I don't know if as you say, this man has political advisors and he just doesn't listen to them, because surely they know this is the wrong thing to do.
It should be devastating politically. I would think so. I can't imagine anyone would be so committed to him and his idea of home, you know, of border security or whatever he's calling it, that they would justify him not paying those people who are supposed to do that job.
They announced a poll today on Meet the Press where they said the majority of Americans do not believe that there's a crisis at the border. That's another thing. He's using some of the oldest political tricks in the book to, pit us against each other. And we need to stop that.
Well, we've
come to the end of our time. It's hard for me to believe that, but we have, and I want to thank you so much for being with us. Anise, if you're a regular listener to the show, you know that Anise comes on from time to time to give us an update because she's a stalwart in the fight for statehood. And, as I said at the beginning of the show, she's never wavered. She's always stood in the same place firmly for statehood. And we so appreciate that because she's a guiding light. So we're going to leave you today since we started talking
inviting me. I have to really thank you for being who you are and for carrying this banner right to victory. I know that's where we're headed.
Yeah, thank you, Anise. I know that too. And so we're going to leave you tonight since we talked about young people. I'm going to get away from the Beatles and the Beach Boys, and we're going to do a song in honor of Anise Jenkins by Miley Cyrus called The Climb. And if you're familiar with the song, you know that it's about the journey and how important the journey is. And I just want you to know, Anise Jenkins, I'm honored to be on this journey with you. So here's The Climb. Thank you so much. And we'll see you next week. And Maria will be back. Thank you.
I can almost see it, that dream I'm dreaming, but there's a voice inside my head saying, you'll never reach it. Every step I'm taking, every move I make feels lost with no direction. My faith is shaken.
In the capital of this nation, 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.